This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week are Tina Amini.
Hi, everybody.
Sam Claiborne.
That was a surprise start. I know.
It was like sudden.
Yeah, after 660 episodes, I've got to keep you on your toes. And Justin Davis.
Wow. Scoop.
Here. That does mean we're 5 episodes away from episode 666.
Yeah, that's please cool. We're in the neighborhood of the beast.
Please be excited. We've got a great show for this week. Obviously, there's another huge acquisition we got to talk about. I think it's just every 2 weeks now, we're going to get another one of these to talk about. Mm-hmm. Sony buying Bungie, of course. Both the PlayStation 5 and the Nintendo Switch have hit really big sales milestones recently. But first, IGN's review of Dying Light 2 went up this week. Who reviewed that one for us, Tina?
Who did review that one? I haven't read it yet, honestly.
It was a freelancer.
Had a freelancer review that one for us. Yeah. Travis, I believe.
Yeah, it was Travis Northrup.
Travis Northrup.
Yeah. You know, and if anyone has ever listened to Fireteam Chat, definitely know Travis.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Good show.
And I think both Sam and Tina have been playing, which I was a little bit surprised about. It just doesn't seem like a particularly Tina or Sam game.
Yeah?
But what'd you guys think?
I'm only a few hours in because I've gotten distracted by some other things that I'm sure we will talk about on future Scoop episodes. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I do like zombie environments. I like horror games. It's obviously a little bit different because it's much more action oriented. So you're doing, you know, what people know with Dying Light. It's predominantly a melee focused experience, predominantly parkour experience, which is not just a trend from however many years ago that was a trend. It's just the general way that you're moving about this environment. And I know Sam has different opinions. I do like it because it introduces this new element that's not just about combat. So you're kind of navigating the world as it changes in intensity between daytime and nighttime. Anybody who's played Dying Light 1 is familiar with this kind of mechanic. But it really does amp up the intensity for me. And I don't know if it's a matter of the fact that it's actually not that difficult when it's at the nighttime, because I've heard people mentioning that before, that they didn't think that the nighttime was as intense as it could have been. But for me, once it hits nighttime and I know that there's a possibility to be chased by a literal horde of zombies, maybe I just get in my own head about it. Because if I miss like a ledge, I miss a jump or something, I get into like hyper panic mode, and you know, I got to find the next truck to trounce on top of and make sure I get to a safe point. So I liked the system of, because during the daytime you can unlock these, I forget what they're called because it's been like a couple of days, so of course I've forgotten everything about the details of this game, but there's like the safety zones, the hideouts that you can effectively unlock so that they have the UV light available, and then you can take on your nighttime missions. So I like that element of strategy that was involved too. Like I'd get into an area, unlock those elements and all the side quests I can do during the daytime, and then focus on like surviving the nighttime moments too. Mm-hmm. Sam, different opinions from you?
Well, I think my take is a little bit earlier. I like that. So there's a really cool concept of this game, which people often describe as, you know, Mirror's Edge with zombies. But like that's like the controller's map that way. And like it really is about parkour and first person. And that's why like these escape sequences are really fun. Right. I think that's a really clever way to set up the game. I was expecting, I don't know why I expected this, but I thought this game setting was a big open world that included, you know, nature and exploration and stuff like that. It's a city. Like it's like near that. It's like you're on top of roofs a lot, you know? And like if you're not doing that, you're in like smaller combat areas, you know, and so there's that. So that trapping alone I don't like as much. And then it's not well acted or written, and that really shouldn't matter in a game like this, but it's a drag. Like the first part of it takes a long time to get into, and there's a bunch of kind of silly things that happen to your character where you're like, why are these people being so cool to this outsider that's invaded that they should just immediately kill? Like I've seen zombie films before. Nobody's nice, you know? And like, and they're mean to each other, but like this guy gets a pass every time. It just doesn't feel right. This is really strange. And then, whatever, maybe there's like story. If people like the story and how it concludes and stuff like that, but there's that. And then I think the setting's a little silly. Like why are all these people living in this rundown city that's filled with zombies? Like that doesn't make any sense. Like they have to hide from the zombies every night, but they have like nice bars and stuff they go to. Like it's just crazy. Like it's just like, and like all of that should add up to being like a really cool set of gameplay mechanics. And that's where I think that's mainly true. Mm-hmm. But so far for me, the one stick, I like the jumping. I like the, when I miss, I feel like kind of like sometimes I shouldn't have missed like a big jump and stuff like that. So that's one thing. But like generally the motion and the ways there's basically obstacle courses that are set up for you to get through are really fun. The combat that I've done, and again, you get like magic basically and stuff like that in the game, like that, you know, you get like superpowers, right? In some form. I don't know what they are because I haven't played it, so I'm not spoiling it. I'm just telling you that what the game tells you in the beginning. The initial fighting is more like combo, like precision aimy fighting stuff that's kind of like from, you know, it's first person, so it's not really like action games to compare this to, like, you know, Bayonetta or something like that. But it takes a skill set that, like, it takes a long time to kill enemies sometimes, and you have to do a lot of like combinations of attacks. And I'm just like, that's just not what I want to be doing in a game. I like the running sets and the escaping sets of activities, and then the combat when I'm like fighting a human, I'm like, this sucks. I don't want to do this. Mm. It just takes forever. And I'm just like, when is this over? Mm-hmm. You know?
It does take forever. And it can be really clunky. And I think by design, because you're supposed, like, every one of your hits is supposed to be intentional. You have stamina that you have to keep track of. Like there's all these different elements. It's all about survivability ultimately. Like it feels like it's supposed to be this somewhat realistic experience of a post-apocalyptic but still zombie-filled world. So the clunkiness, like it does feel like the controls are a little bit clunky and heavy because you're supposed to do these intentional hits, and it's, I don't know. It just feels a little bit limiting for me. I'm sure it's like by design, like I said, but I prefer like fast, fluid, like better action, you know, more accessibility to different kinds of weapons for different kinds of scenarios that don't, you know, break on you instantaneously and whatnot.
I think what people will like about this game is that it is like, it's adrenaline, you know, rush inducing in a lot of ways. Like they've kind of nailed a gameplay and, you know, fear factor, which is just like, it's super cool. And like, for me, it's just not the right setting for that. I think some people like really, really like this game for what it is, though. I can see its quality. Mm.
I never played the first one. Given what you know about me, would you recommend I play Dying Light 2?
Mm. No. Mm-hmm. I think like, you know, because one of the things about Dying Light, and like we've seen this in preview clips and whatnot, and they've really raved about the fact that there's such a progression built into the game. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I can't exactly appropriately pinpoint whether or not, you know, it's any of our games or a game that's worth like putting in the rest of the time to actually complete the storyline. Mm-hmm. Simply because of that slow progression. So I feel like once we get to a point where we're crafting more things, like maybe it'll feel a little bit less slow and heavy handed and clunky. And maybe it would actually like up the action to match the intensity. I'll put more hours into it. I'll report back.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah, and we're. What's that? It has co-op, and we were talking about trying that out, and like maybe that could like offset some of the issues with it. So there's that, and like I think like you know, I do want to see like maybe the game. To be fair to this game, like I can see all the systems are setting up and what there is later. That's great. But for Damon, I think you would be frustrated by how long it takes to get there because I know that you've bounced off of games early, and for the same reason I have. You know, just like, why am I putting up with this? Like, I have other games I can fall into faster.
Yeah, I think that's the bigger problem is February 2022.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I'm not sure if Dying Light 2 is on my horizon right now. But Justin, what Lego game are you up to?
I'm at the very, very end of Lego Indiana Jones.
Oh my gosh.
It is great. That's the second Lego game for those keeping track. And the stack rank of them, Lego Indiana Jones, it's going to be over. Lego Star Wars, the Skywalker saga.
Well, not the Skywalker saga, right? Just the original trilogy.
My mistake. Lego Indiana Jones, the complete saga, which is the original compilation of Lego 1 and 2. So next week, I should be on to Lego Batman, I think is number 3.
Oh my gosh.
Is Crystal Skull on that one?
No, they did an insane thing with the Lego games where they released two Lego Indiana Jones games 1 year apart. And the one I'm playing now is movies 1 through 3. And the one that came out the year later retells the story of 1, 2, 3. So like a new level with the bolt, Boulder Escape and a new level of Temple of Doom. But then the back half of the game is all Crystal Skull.
Mm-hmm. Was the heart ripping out part in Temple of Doom still really scary?
No, they mumble their way through it. It's pretty cute.
Yeah.
So if you had to rank them, if you had to rank them so far, how's your ranking going?
Of the Lego games?
Yeah, because you played, 1.5? Almost 2?
I've played 2 of them, and Lego Indiana Jones is number 1 out of the 2.
Wow.
No, it has, like, legitimately good puzzles in it. Like, they're not... It's not, like, look... Like, it's Lego games, so the puzzles aren't, like, that hardcore, that hard. But, like, they're the same. They're, like, on par with, like, the puzzles of, like, an Uncharted game, you know? Like, you're going into these rooms, you gotta explore all around and find the orbs and figure out how to get out. Like, it's great. It's a great time. Mm-hmm. It's not like Lego Star Wars is like a little bit of a chore. And like this game feels old and like the vehicles feel really bad. Whereas like Lego Indiana Jones, I'm like, yes, this is my business.
Do they tell the story chronologically, starting with Temple of Doom?
No. And also the story makes absolutely no sense if you haven't seen the movies. Like when they mumble their way through these cutscenes, I was like realizing, because I've been playing through Lego games with my daughter too. Like if she hadn't seen Indiana Jones, you'd have no, it doesn't give you enough to know like what's going on. It's kind of unclear who it's for.
They're assuming the player has seen the movies.
100%.
Okay, let's get into it. The big scoop of the week. Sony is acquiring Bungie for $3.6 billion. Not quite $70 billion that Microsoft is paying for Activision Blizzard, but nothing to sneeze at, I don't think. Of course, Bungie has got Destiny. That's kind of all that we know that Bungie has these days. Although I think they have announced that they're working on something new in the background. Something it's supposed to be comical, I think is what some job listings have said.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah. So whatever.
Yeah, it's like a Bungie's new IP. Yeah. We know that they're working on a new IP and they've cited that. So that's all we know so far.
Yeah.
Like Octodad?
It's going to be. Yes. We can confirm here.
With live service abilities.
Bungie is making the sequel to Octodad.
You can buy more tentacles for your Octodad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
NFTs are non-fungible tentacles.
What does this do? Is this surprising news to you, Tina? What does this do for Sony or for Bungie?
I mean, it's not entirely surprising given that they have a history of a relationship already with Bungie. So it makes sense. And in their previous acquisitions, you can see a pattern of like they've worked with these studios before, they have an established relationship with them. So the acquisition itself makes sense. And frankly, like we're already beginning to feel, and you know, the IGN news team is hearing rumors that we can't We can't fully substantiate yet, otherwise we would report them. But for now, we're hearing rumors that like this is certainly not the end of things. Other people are hearing those rumors as well. So it certainly does feel like this is going to be the year of acquisition. So it's also not surprising for that factor. As for what it does for Sony, I think it's kind of fascinating because their strategy historically, if you look at like quotes from Jim Ryan and other, you know, executives that have spoken to like what they prioritize for the PlayStation ecosystem, it's very much been about their boxes to reduce it just to that kind of description. Whereas like Xbox has been much more about, you know, an ecosystem, like we're available on PC, Game Pass is our big thing. So the interesting thing about Bungie in this situation is what they've specifically said about wanting to create more live service games, and that Destiny has a framework for that sort of thing, that Bungie has the talent to be able to incorporate that in like a player friendly sort of a system. So it does feel like they're expanding beyond the realm of just these like big cinematic first person narrative driven games, or not necessarily first person, but all the other stuff that, you know, that's been a lot of what their focus has been. I meant single player. And I think this is exposing it to them wanting to diversify what they're working on within the framework of companies that they still have like familiarity and trust with as well. So I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of games, like undoubtedly we'll still see those single player narrative driven, big cinematic, like, you know, AAA looking, feeling kinds of game experiences. But I think we're going to start to see some other segments that will be part of like the PlayStation strategy moving forward after this acquisition, and once we start to see what those games are forming up to be.
Yeah, it's true that Sony doesn't really have a live service offering of its own. And then there was another news story this week, forgive me if you mentioned this already, but that PlayStation says it wants to launch more than 10 live service games by 2026 over the next 4 years. And I, you know, presumably Bungie could help with that. But that would be more than 2 live service games a year, if you split it up evenly. And I don't know. Live service games are designed to be, you know, to like take up all your time and make you feel guilty for not playing it for one day. You know, so I like
what they're designed for.
Don't you think people who play a live service game probably just like have like one that they mainly focus on?
Or a couple, maybe.
Yeah, maybe two, but it's like, how many live service games can one person juggle at a time, you know?
Totally, yeah. Especially because they're really social experiences too. Yeah. So people end up like, hey, Friday, we're doing that raid or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it makes the Bungie acquisition make sense in context where it's like, well, is Destiny really worth, you know, that many billions of dollars? Like, you know, I don't know, maybe it is. Like, I'm not sure how many millions of people are still playing it, but like, that tech being loaned out and that expertise being used to spin up other live services makes sense. Mm-hmm. Makes some sense, at least.
Yeah.
Jonathan Dornbush wrote an op-ed on IGN today about the acquisition and about what Sony's intentions might be. And he mentioned an interesting point about how Sony's like total gross income from games right now, about a third of that is already from DLC. So, I mean, you can see that right there. They want to grow that part of their business, and live games are notorious, maybe not notorious, but famous for having DLC, right? Like that's you keep on paying for this thing, not necessarily in subscription format always, but in cosmetics and upgrades.
Cosmetics, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Go ahead.
I made a goof on social media. I mean, it's not a goof, it's a true fact, but just that Bungie has been bought by Microsoft and Sony. Mm-hmm. And they're the only company on earth that's been acquired by those two companies. And the number of people in my replies that I have to assume they're kids, and I don't mean this in a pejorative way, but like honestly, younger people, like I got lots of replies from people being like, Microsoft never owned Bungie.
What?
And like, that's far enough in the past. And I'm like, dude, like they're not the Destiny studio in my mind. Like they're the creators of Halo, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like.
And before they were the creators of Marathon, right?
Yeah, they almost got married to Apple. Yep. You know, so that's just an interesting quirk of gaming history that, you know, it hasn't been like, it's not like it's lost to the sands of time. It's like the second thing on the on Bungie's Wikipedia entry. But like there's people out there that are, you know, adults and using social media and are fans of Bungie that just weren't aware that that was an aspect of their company's history.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah. I guess it was maybe 14, 15 years ago now. So. Maybe
it's been a while.
If someone's in their early 20s, Yeah.
Because they were spun out, I think, in the mid-2000s and continued to make Halo games. They made like two more Halo games after they were not owned by Microsoft anymore.
What, like ODST and Reach?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, what's interesting about Sony's kind of like long-term portfolio and our perception of them, and Jonathan touched on a part of this, but I'll expand on it in his article. When Sony first came around, they actually took over, PlayStation took over as like the kind of the sports games console. Like they had a bunch of, you know, like sit on your couch and play with your friends games that range from Tony Hawk to the big sports series like Madden to Gran Turismo, right? Like those are the biggest games from PlayStation in the 90s. It took a long time to build their business into what we think of them as now. I think, you know, it took 20 years, and this took that past 10 years as like a company that does the experiences that Tina was mentioning, the big single player, like, you know, epics. That wasn't really part of Sony. So like they did have RPGs, they had JRPGs, but like that's not, those are on everything now. They don't even have those as an exclusive. So like it's kind of interesting to think like, okay, they actually need more of a, they need more of a generalist component, which is like basically like that's what live games are becoming, right? They're like a lot more types of gamers played Fortnite than played, you know, God of War.
You know, it's also worth pointing out that in their sort of strategic vision for expanding what the company does and what their expertise is, you know, this is obvious to people that pay attention, but this has been in the works for months and months,
yeah,
right? Like,
yeah.
It's not like Sony's like, who are we going to buy? Yeah. Like, yeah.
We've got, who can we buy in the next 2 weeks?
Yeah.
No. And speaking of Bungie being, you know, the original creator of Halo, there's something we can nip in the bud. We got an email from Jules in Belgium who wrote in to say, with the recent acquisition of Bungie by PlayStation, does this mean we might see the Master Chief Collection on PS4 or PS5? No, because even though Bungie created Halo, Microsoft now owns the Halo brand. So until Sony wants to allow Game Pass onto PS4 and PS5, no, you're not going to see Master Chief Collection.
Then. It'd be pretty spicy, though.
It would be pretty spicy. I can't believe in the, like the first month of the new year, we have three acquisitions. Cause don't forget Take-Two, buying up Zynga for $12 billion.
I mean, how happy are you right now? If you're like, you know, I don't know, like Square or Capcom.
Why? Because like, you weren't bought or because you might be bought?
Well, like you're worth more now than you were a month ago. Certainly. Right. Like any large independent game developer that's left.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, because they're all gonna be eyed for poaching. So we can see how that goes.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the U.S. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Well, alongside all of these acquisitions that are happening out there, enough people have acquired the PlayStation 5 to allow it to outsell the Wii U. The Wii U's lifetime numbers. The PS5 is now sitting at 17.3 million units sold as of December 1st, 2021. The Wii U just reached 13.5 million sales. So definitely leapfrogged over that. Next up for the PlayStation 5 is the GameCube. That's the next one it's trying to get to with 22 million. It'll probably do it in first quarter. Well, I know supply chain is still constrained. But surely it won't take them that much longer to sell 5 million more units of PS5.
Always the punching bag, the Wii U, Damon. I don't know why you have to... The Dreamcast sold like exactly the same amount as the Wii U. Why don't we just say Dreamcast?
Yeah.
The Dreamcast. Okay, so let's make the Wii the punching bag because the Nintendo Switch has outsold the Wii.
Mm-hmm. These are your favorite two punching bags.
I think this is... this is kind of incredible. I think the Wii is only five, or I'm sorry, the Nintendo Switch is only 5 years old. The Nintendo Switch has now sold 103.5 million units. It is the third best selling console of all time, home console of all time.
Yep. It passed the PS4, right?
No. But the PS4 is at 117 million.
That's the next one.
That's the next one. But that begs the question, like, is the Nintendo Switch going to outsell the PlayStation 4?
Oh, yeah.
It's insane. The PlayStation 4 is 4 years older than the Switch.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's had so much more time to sell consoles.
Yeah.
I suspect, I don't know if there's been any user research done on this. I'd be curious to dig into this more, but I bet that more homes own two Switches than like no homes own two PS4s. There are very, very few if they bought a PS4 and PS4 Slim later. Whereas I bet there's more multi-Switch households, but... You know, so when they do cross that threshold, maybe it'll come with a little bit of an asterisk, but it still counts.
It still counts. It's still all, you know, money in Nintendo's pocket.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's well deserved. Like that console still feels innovative and fun. Like, you know, I'm kind of over the low power of the thing 5 years on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still really like my Switch. Like you take a risk and I'm always happy to see that pay off in a big way.
Yep.
Isn't it a little surprising that it's outsold the Wii without being the cultural phenomenon that the Wii was.
No, Animal Crossing, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's nothing like Wii Sport. Like, okay, Animal Crossing isn't being like brought into retirement.
Animal Crossing's your third favorite punching bag. Let's just get that.
That is true.
Yeah.
I mean, the retirement home thing, sure. But like Animal Crossing became an actual like it's a cultural phenomenon with like, you know, women and teens and like, you know, maybe an audience that like isn't tuning into GameScoop every week. But it's like all over like, you know, Tumblr and TikTok and everywhere else. It still is to this day.
Yeah, I know it's one of the best selling games on the Switch for sure.
I think Pokemon is just always going to drive this, too. You know, like remember, Nintendo was releasing Pokemon only on a 3DS during the Wii U's life cycle. So it's a one system. There's not two, you know, it's just like wherever Pokemon is, there's just a giant audience. And boy, they are putting out a lot of Pokemon games. There's two out in the past 3 months. Big ones.
Well, I know the last one, Arceus, the latest one. What was the one before that even? You're not talking
Diamond and Pearl.
Diamond and Pearl. And then there was the Pokemon Snap last year too, right?
And Snap, yeah. So in the past year, because Pokemon Snap basically came out in April, so a year and change. There's been three big Pokemon games. Although that one didn't hit as hard as I thought it would.
I was just gonna say that one seemed to come and go.
People asked for it for years, and then it was good. But like, I don't think it was as hard as people maybe wanted it to be.
I want a really hard Pokemon Snap.
Well, Pokemon Snap is hard. It's like super annoying. Like there's like crazy stupid stuff you have to get to like, those critters in your balls.
Whoa. This is a family show. So,
hey, Sam. Look, you should play a Pokemon game before you make jokes about it.
I don't think I should. I think I should keep making.
No, I don't think I will.
I think I should keep making Pokemon jokes. Are you going to play Arceus, Sam?
I would like to. Yeah, I've heard the thing that entices me about it is that it's easier to get all of the Pokemon in this game. And by easy, I mean it's like more fun and not like this like brutal trudge of trading with people or doing insane tasks of breeding and stuff like that. It's like you can go out and battle and collect 200 and whatever Pokemon. So like I liked that in Pokemon Go, and I liked that in the first Pokemon game I've played, which has been remade, you know, 25 times since then. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I enjoy that part of Pokemon, and it seems like it's worth playing. I don't know if I want to play it right now, but I'll play it.
Sure.
I was not interested in it, and then I saw all the really cool checklists in the game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Isn't that stuff neat?
That's all I really want in a video game. Mm-hmm. That's just why checklists. I play video games, just to fill bars. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, even though the PlayStation 5 has managed to outsell the Wii U in just 1 year of its lifespan, Sony has been forced to cut its PlayStation 5 sales forecast by millions of units over the next year. This is because of the ongoing component shortages. Sony had previously expected to sell more than 14.8 million PS5s by March of 2022, a number that would have seen the console exceed PS4 sales on its second financial year on the market. But now the company is no longer expecting, and I'm reading from IGN's news article, no longer expecting to be able to reach that level of supply. It's now forecasting 11.5 million, so, you know, 3-some million units shorter. And IGN user Evil Zephyr wonders, could this alter plans for the PS5 having actual exclusives? And then there are very few actual PlayStation 5 exclusives that we know of that are coming out anytime soon. I don't know, Tina, what do you think?
I mean, about exclusives specifically, it's hard to tell.
Games that you have to own a PlayStation 5 to play.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we've seen a slow start to next gen in general. Honestly, we haven't seen a ton of that. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe it's just that first year, second year kind of transitionary period. And there's certainly a lot of like emphasis and strategy on like there's a big user base still on PS4. So want to make sure, and just the old gen in general. So obviously support needs to be there. But it's also not shocking at all because of just the shortages that everybody's been experiencing in so many different industries because of the pandemic. So they cited that also as part of the reasoning as far as why they had to kind of cut their projection there. But we do know that the PS5 still outsold the PS4 in its first year. So that says something about the interest level still being there.
Oh, for sure.
It's significant.
For sure. The question is, do you think people at Sony look at these numbers saying we're going to ship and sell 3 million units less than we thought we could? That would mean if we make a PS5 exclusive, you know, however many it sells, it's going to be selling 3 million units less than it possibly could. Mm-hmm. Let's keep making games for PS4.
Exactly. Yeah. Or like the strategy being, let's have more cross generational options so that we're still reaching our overall fan base rather than the ones who were able to get a PS5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's there's that consideration. And also, you know, when you launch a new console, you want to crush your competition. Right. And they just want to bury Sony and sell as many PlayStation 5s as they can. And they don't need exclusives. Like, they have absolutely no need or benefit to releasing a game as an exclusive right now, because if they're selling PlayStation 5s, they can.
Yeah.
Well, especially with the live service strategy, they should put it everywhere and get as much maximize their profits for all their live service games.
That is absolutely true. I also like the development between it. Clearly, it's easy to develop games on the PS5 and PS4 concurrently. And that seems to be the case for all the Xboxes because everybody's doing it, right? Hmm. And that wasn't always the case. Like, developing something for the PS2 and PS1 would have had completely different teams. It was like the tech couldn't have been more different. Like, it's incredibly a huge gap between those systems. It's like Game Boy Advance and GameCube, right? Like, those, you can't do the same game. So now I feel like it's like, you know, levels of PC, right? Where it's you can actually make this thing run on older platforms. That is also, like, I think it's showing. I really have not seen a game on the PS5 that, you know, looks so much better than, you know, Last of Us 2 or God of War. Like, those games look incredible still, you know? Yeah. And they're just like, they haven't been surpassed in like really noticeable ways. They've been surpassed, sure, in technical ways, like resolution and, you know, and reflections and things like that. But like, meaningfully, when you're in the game and playing, like, these games they're not the leap that the games used to be, which doesn't mean the demand is not there, you know?
Sure.
But it means that the developers probably have an easier time porting.
Yeah. It is interesting to think, if you think of the consoles like PS4 and PS5 and even Xbox One, Series S and Series X as just different levels of RTX cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's real.
There's no way that like God of War and Gran Turismo and Horizon would be coming out on PS4 if PS5s were plentiful and everyone could buy one that wants one. Yeah. Maybe Horizon, but I feel like that's the cutoff, right? But like God of War, that still has an indeterminate release date far away. Like, I just can't see it. But you know, that's an unanswerable question ultimately.
Mm-hmm. And now that they're coming to PC, it's even more confusing to think about that. Mm-hmm. Like would there have been a plan to release those for PS4 later or something like that? Like, it is weird that they're not being used to push the PS5, obviously, but man, things are unpredictable and in flux because of all of the platforms things are showing up on now.
Tina, spinoff show, Next Gen Game Watch. When is God of War coming? When is Breath of the Wild 2 coming?
Yeah, we'll save that for all the inevitable episodes for even Console Watch that we can cover that off on.
Maybe that could just be a recurring segment here on the show.
There you go.
How do we feel today? Is Breath of the Wild 2 coming out this year?
Mm-hmm.
You think it is?
Oh, we can do
that. Hurts my
list.
Heart.
Wait, did you
is
say
it,
no?
Is that in doubt? People don't think it is?
I think some people are in doubt.
Oh, well, Zelda's just always, I mean, Zelda fans, they know everything's delayed always. Like, I'm shocked that Zelda games come out in 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen nothing. So that's a bad sign.
We've only seen Anuma apologizing for delaying it. And we're not showing it. Here's something I want to show you. And we can't show you Breath of the Wild 2 yet. He has to do that all the time.
It's throwing me for a loop. Like, I hadn't crossed my mind that maybe it wasn't coming out. But now I'm like, synthesizing this concept in real time.
Oh, yeah. It'll be like, oh, but you guys got Kirby. It's fine, right? You're Splatoon. What are you mad about?
Bayonetta 3.
Kirby does.
And to be clear, all of us want it to come out this year. I was just curious because I think a lot of people...
I wanted it to come out this month.
Well... You know,
now this has made me sad. It's like, Justin, your cat's really old. Do you think you'll still have your cat next year? I'm like, oh no,
we're not supposed to talk about that.
You know, Sam, some people might be able to finish certain other games this month or next month. Now that Breath of the Wild 2 is not here.
Yes, so there's that too. Those people must be very happy about their game in that position.
Also this week, the developer of Shovel Knight announced its first like real new game, not Shovel Knight related, in what, 8 years since 2014, I think, when they were started. The game is, what is it called? Mina the Hollower just rolls off the tongue. But it's a top-down action adventure in a Game Boy Color style of art, but with 60 frames per second, really smooth animation. They say that they're, well, first of all, before we get into the bits of this, Sam, do you get like a Link's Awakening vibe to this?
Yeah, I guess so. It's got that Link's Awakening jump, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's very different from Shovel Knight.
That derpy little jump over one block at a time jump?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely different than Shovel Knight. I mean, everybody wants more Zelda likes, right? It'd be great if that was the case. What makes it bone chilling? Is it set in like a Castlevania?
They say it's like a horror themed game. It's got like a gothic setting, even though it's very cutesy. It's a whatever the cute 'em up equivalent for a Castlevania like game it is, I guess.
Yeah, Kid Dracula.
A cutievania? I don't know if I want to go with that.
That's pretty good.
I assume everyone here likes Shovel Knight.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Shovel Knight's a great game. I haven't played any of the like spinoffs.
Yeah, I think I got enough Shovel Knight when I played the first Shovel Knight.
When you played the first time. That makes sense.
I never talked about it on Scoop, but I played the puzzle. I forget what it's called, but the Shovel Knight puzzle game that came out just a few months ago. And it's awesome. Like, you know, because of course it is. But like, yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, that's something that I knew I would probably like. I just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, you should.
Shovel Knight was a big Kickstarter success back in the day. I've never Kickstarted anything. Justin, did you... Did you help back
ever?
Shovel Knight? I've never Kickstarted anything. You have?
Did I I don't know if I Kickstarted Shovel Knight, but I have Kickstarted probably 100 things.
Wow.
Like so much.
And Sam, you've Kickstarted something?
I mean, I've Kickstarted, a few things. Just a few, though. I Kickstarted Yooka-Laylee.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, anyway, RIP. Tina, have you Kickstarted anything?
I don't think I have. Like, there might have been a one-off here or there somewhere. Maybe a friend was doing something and I supported it. But in general, it always makes it easier for coverage, too, when you're not technically a financial backer of a game. Yeah. So I've always just, like, left it to coverage instead of financial backing.
Sure. Well, they're returning to Kickstarter for Mina the Hollower. They say, we want your feedback, collaboration, and support in making Mina the Hollower the best game it can possibly be. That's why we're returning to our roots, kicking off Mina the Hollower's development as a Kickstarter campaign. Though we're financing a majority of this project ourselves, we hope we can create a more expansive game this way. More importantly, we want to build a community around Kickstarter, much like we did with Shovel Knight. And unsurprisingly, they smashed their Kickstarter goal, I think, just within hours of it going live. Mm-hmm. However,
what was their goal?
300 and something thousand, 310,000.
Mm-hmm. Is that how much Sony could buy that game for?
Yeah, probably. But there's a IGN user, Slardy Bartfast, had a comment that I saw actually repeated by several different users on our article. He says, it seems mildly shady that a developer this successful wants to use Kickstarter again. Seems like they kept the goal extremely low and just want to have the same sort of player and funder engagement and enthusiasm that got Shovel Knight a lot of buzz, which may actually be a really smart idea, though I don't think crowdfunding in general is nearly as hot as it was 5 years ago. So Slardy Bartfast says it's mildly shady, but also really smart. I don't know, Justin, since you've started a lot of things, what's your take on that?
I don't know that I would characterize it as shady. I mean, I understand the perspective of, like, the intent behind Kickstarter is, like, we can't make this thing unless we get money up front. Like, we need money up front to make the thing. And so it's like, it solves that, like, chicken or egg situation, right? And that's not the case with this game, where they're like, well, we're mostly funding it ourselves, and we don't really need this money, but if you want to give it to us, feel free. So, like, I guess I get that. But, like, the flip side is also true of, like, it's very low stakes. It's not like you feel like, well, if I want this game to exist, I'm required to give them the money for it up front. It's sort of like, it feels like it's totally optional, right? Where, like, you know, like, no one feels like they're being strong-armed into it. We're like, well, Pillars of Eternity, this computer RPG, is not going to exist if they don't get the funding they need for it up front. So, you know, I don't know. I would need to think about it, I guess, because I'm not familiar with people using Kickstarter in this sort of, like, very low stakes, low pressure way. Yeah. But I think it's probably fine.
Yeah, I don't think it's shady. You know, I think they're using it as a way, like they say, it sort of builds and it makes the people who Kickstarter, they feel invested from the start. Right. So they're already on board and they go out and they evangelize this game for them because they've already invested in it. It does.
Yeah. New pre-orders. I really don't see this as any different than buying a game. Like, you're buying a game that, like, you know, if the game doesn't get made and you pre-order a game, you get your pre-order back. That's the same thing with pre-orders.
Well, so, you don't, like, get your Kickstarter back. They keep the money.
Yeah, that's evil. They have given it back. There's been instances in which they do that.
But that's not how that would be voluntary.
What's
on
the
their
famous
part if they
one?
Chose to do that.
What's the famous one that's been in development? Like, it's like a strategy space game.
Well, Star Citizen.
Yeah, not, Star Citizen. Yeah.
Not running off of Kickstarter. I also, from Yacht Club's perspective, that's the developer, right? Kickstarter is not cheap. Like, the cut that Kickstarter takes is, like, pretty high.
Yeah, so it's weird to use that platform, huh?
A little bit. But, you know, I don't know. I think it seems okay. That's not what I use Kickstarter for the record. Like, I kickstarted Blackbeard's Journal, which is a puzzle book game of these pirate puzzles.
And, like, you want the product, right? That's why that's the whole reason. Like, you couldn't play Yooka-Laylee originally unless you pre-ordered it using their Kickstarter. You had to do that. Like, there's no other distribution. Like, I want the product, you know?
Yeah. I also kickstarted a board game magazine. Oh, so much good stuff on Kickstarter.
Yeah, the only other, like, sort of thing that would give me pause, thinking of even, like, myself as, like, a creator, is when you go to something like Kickstarter, and it's not just, like, a binary situation, like Justin was explaining, like, look, if this doesn't get funded, we cannot make this thing. If you're doing it to sort of build a community, like Yacht Club says, and get people involved in the game, and you want their feedback, and you sort of position it as a collaboration between the creator and the fans, I think sometimes fans can get a little sense of, they start to feel a sense of ownership, and sort of like they have a seat at the table, and they can dictate, you know, decisions that the developer would make. I think it can be a tricky situation for creators to get themselves into. When you think of someone like Hideo Kojima, someone who would literally never Kickstart anything, because he's an auteur. He has a vision. He's going to make exactly his vision and put it out there. And if people like it, great. And if not, F off, you know?
Philosophically, it's... Go ahead, Justin. I was going to say, philosophically, it's a lot like early access games too, except you're, you know, actively playing, you know, in some sort of beta version of the game. But the intent being like, you know, we want your guys' active feedback. Some people feel icky about that, I suppose, because it's like, okay, so what are we, like, free QA for you?
Yeah.
I've seen that argument for sure.
Worse than free. You're paying them to do QA.
Yeah. Well, early access, not necessarily.
True. Yeah.
Not sometimes, but yeah, different than Kickstarter for sure. Yeah.
That sort of community building strikes me as a little bit like I'm a huge Kickstarter fan, probably the biggest out of the four of us. And I'm a huge Yacht Club fan, but like, I don't know that I quite believe them. Like, they could accomplish all of that through Discord, you know, or through whatever. Like, there doesn't need to be sort of the financial component to it.
Yeah.
But I haven't looked at their campaign yet. Like, it could be a situation where if they have stretch goals, like, then the fans giving money up front get to sort of increase the scope of the game. Like, you know, so actually maybe to walk back what I just said, like, if they can test the waters for how much the gaming community is interested in this kind of game, if they love it and they blow their Kickstarter up and it goes completely crazy, like, maybe the game gets to be twice as big as it is if the response is a little bit softer and more tepid.
Yeah. I'm totally interested in playing this game. I'm sure the game will turn out great.
Yep.
Just an interesting scenario. You guys remember a while back when we heard from a listener who lived in a tree for 3 days?
Oh, yeah.
That sound familiar? No. Well, no. He's back. Travis from St. Louis, Missouri. The subject line of his email is, "Hey, it's the guy who lived in a tree again." Long time, second time writing in. I'm the guy that lived in a tree for 3 days. You read my question on Game Spook 2020. Anyway, I was wondering what hobbies you have outside of your careers in video games in general. I know besides the whole crew being avid cat enthusiasts, that Damon has his music and gory horror films. Justin loves board games. Tina's the movie buff and the ultimate ant. And Sam is the pinball wizard. I understand this could be a silly question. For Damon, he says, it might be a silly question for Damon and Justin, since with their kids, time for hobbies might be pretty slim. No, not a silly question.
Mm. Just general hobbies?
That's what he's asking for, outside of our career in video games.
I mean, all the usual. Go ahead, Sam.
Well, yeah, okay. I like repairing things. Mm-hmm. I'm very much into guitar amp repair right now, and pinball, and of course arcade machines and restoration stuff like that. I do a lot of collecting. I'm a really avid record collector. I probably go to 3 or 4 record stores a week. Shop constantly online. I like certain eras of music, and I'm obsessed with them, and catalog them, and buy books about them, and stuff like that. Mm. The other thing is I love traveling, and I haven't been able to do that in years, and I hate it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly, like, a lot of what fits into my list is pretty limited these days too, either because of the pandemic or like other life things. But I grew up a competitive swimmer, and I still very much love swimming.
I never knew that about you. That's awesome.
Yeah, I got trophies and everything. Wow, I have math trophies and swimming trophies and dancing trophies. So I've been all over the place.
Oh, wow.
But swimming I've kept up. It's just such an incredible way of working out, because it's really low impact. It's great for your back. I have like a lot of back problems. So I haven't done that just by virtue of the fact that I moved to Texas over the pandemic, and like haven't really wanted to like find a public space to do a lot of those activities in. However, I still have kept up my love for hiking because it's, you know, outdoors. It's a little bit more remote. I even like doing like the drive. Like, I love road trips. So I love doing the long drive to a remote hike. And hopefully there's some sort of waterfall or watering hole at the end of it as like the big goal, the trophy that you get at the end of it. Mm-hmm. And then all the usual suspect stuff. So movies was already named, TV shows. And over the last 2 years, I've been trying to be even more cohesive about it since I'm covering like not just game stuff, but entertainment stuff as well. So I've been trying to keep up with everything as diligently as I can. I'm still behind on Boba Fett's this week. So I hear some good things about it. I've managed to avoid spoilers somehow. Oh, wow. Magically. Yeah, I know. It's the second I see like, nope, done, gone. I'm not looking. I have my shot later today, hopefully.
That's why you ignored my invitation to go get Boba tea.
Because I was worried about it. Exactly. I was like, watch Boba Fett? No.
Delete.
Exactly. A filter for it. A brain filter. Yeah. And all the other usual suspects of things that people enjoy to do, like reading and discovering new music. And unfortunately, not doing so much of the exploring bars and restaurants stuff that I like to do with friends. But, you know, to TBD, I suppose, in the future.
Yep. Justin, video games, board games.
Yeah, I mean, the thing you need to know about me is that I don't like to go do anything ever. it's like, that's why having kids was like, great. It's like, oh, awesome. Now I don't need to come up with an excuse for why I'm not going to come out. It's like the kids become the excuse. No, I mean, I like little things like this little guy, which if you're watching on camera, this is actually not Lego blocks. They're called LOZ blocks and they're about 25 or 30% smaller than Lego blocks. So, and I like things like this. Like Magic the Gathering cards. I got my very first Magic the Gathering alpha card in the mail the other day. So that was exciting. I feel really lucky and really blessed that growing up, my two hobbies and things I like to do were I like to play video games and I like to write. And so I didn't ever have a fallback. I didn't ever have a plan B. This was like always the path that like I feel like my adult life and my career needed to take. And so, you know, board games, video games, card games, Magic the Gathering, Lego, and all that nerd stuff, and getting a chance to be creative and write about it and talk about it and review it has been, you know, that's always been my jam.
Well, you ended up in the right place. Same with me. My wife and I love to travel. Obviously, we haven't been able to do that very much recently. We also love to check out new restaurants, but with two kids, that's also very difficult to do. So thankfully, we both like to cook, and we cook most nights of the week. And we also were members of a couple of wine clubs, so we really like to cook a nice meal and have a bottle of wine. I've got my music, of course, and then in addition to gory horror movies, I'd say I'm mostly just interested in genre films in general. So horror movies, action movies, sci-fi movies, and the more, the closer it's related to the aesthetic of the 80s, the better.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Yeah. To add on to that, because you're reminding me, like, yes, movies in general, but horror movies, I think everybody knows this. Obviously, the panel knows this. But I love horror movies. And I do this thing with my, because I grew up in New York and I have friends that are still there. So I do this thing with my one particular horror movie buddy, and we call it simul streaming. Nobody's allowed to steal that. I'm totally claiming copyright now. This totally counts. So simul streaming, TM, trademarked, is where we literally just FaceTime together, and then she counts in 3, 2, 1, go, and we press play on go. And then I can always hear her audio. We level it out a little bit, and we're watching a movie together digitally. It's great for pandemic times, especially. Yeah, highly recommend.
Damon, I think you record and put out music. I do a lot of that as well. I haven't been able to play live shows in a couple of years now, which is really sad. I don't really want to go into it on the show, but I do a lot of live stuff. I'm actually pretty involved in booking bands in the Bay Area and doing a bunch of stuff within, you know, the scene that I'm part of, and really, really enjoy that. And I miss it like crazy. And each summer I've, you know, been involved in putting on some pretty cool stuff with some of my favorite bands from the 60s, 70s and 80s. And you know, that type of stuff is just like, I can't wait for that to come back. And it's been brutal.
Okay. And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Austin, not the city of Austin. It comes from a person named Austin in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Confusing.
Let the questioning begin.
What have we been talking about?
Is this a top-down game?
No.
I don't ever really believe there is a meta, besides like it being a game in October.
It's the meta game we like to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was this company, did the company that made this game ever get acquired?
Let's skip that one.
Okay. Is the company that made this game still around?
Yes.
Do they have... this is a complicated question. I was going to use the press conference thing, but I don't even know anymore. I suppose, do they have a press conference at any sort of regular format of a press conference, E3 or their own or otherwise?
Do they put on press conferences, basically?
Yeah. And these days it's like a lot of people have their own digital showcases rather than it necessarily being attached to E3.
Does who? The people that made this game?
Yes. The publisher, right?
Yeah, I suppose that's going to be more encompassing. Yeah, the publisher.
Yes.
So the publisher's around. Sounds like the dev is around. And they're big enough to do kind of advertise stuff. Is this a console exclusive?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Part of a series?
Yes. That's five.
Sony? Is this a Sony game?
No.
Is it a Nintendo game?
Yes.
Whew. Is it a Switch game?
No.
Oh, interesting.
Yoshi's Cookie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wario's Woods.
Yep.
Mario teaches typing. did this come out on a cartridge format?
No.
Ooh. Okay, that's getting a little spicier. Not on the Switch, though. Did this game originally come out for the GameCube?
Yes, that's 10.
Oh, cool. We can get this.
Yeah.
Is this a part of the Mario universe?
No.
Is the franchise still active?
What's the cutoff point? What's the...
I guess, like...
Last 3 years, I guess?
Yeah, and or if there's, like, an announcement for anything upcoming in the future.
You're asking an and or question?
Just stipulating the specific
term. Like this console generation. Is it active this console generation, which includes...
Well, no,
this...
because we asked about the Switch, so I was trying to say for that.
But I'm saying, but that's going forward past now, right? If there's an announcement.
Mm-hmm.
How do you want to phrase your question?
Help me out, somebody.
I can't.
I don't know. Did this have?
I guess we could just do the last 3 years. We can make that be how we frame it.
But we know the answer is no because it's not on the Switch.
Because they've only had the one.
Right. System. Yeah. Right. Switch feels so much earlier.
Are there plans for a sequel for this game?
Not at this time.
Okay.
So let's see. A GameCube game that's not on the Switch that was exclusive to the GameCube. Like, we confirm it's made by Nintendo, right? Like, to be.
I don't think so. Because the developer question, have they ever been acquired? That could be Nintendo because that'd be weird if they wouldn't have been, right? Was this developed by Nintendo?
No.
But Retro was acquired by Nintendo if it was Metroid Prime, for example.
It's unclear, yeah.
So you have Metroid Prime. It's not on the Switch. You have, I don't know. I'm trying to think. And it's not a Mario game. So it's not like Smash. So there's Pikmin.
It's developed by Nintendo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And does the mobile game count as it being a recent, you know, an active franchise?
Oh, that's a good point.
I don't know. Maybe it doesn't.
So Pikmin does not count.
Well, he also said it wasn't developed by Nintendo.
Did he? When?
Oh, while we were talking.
That was the last question.
Oh, I blacked out during that. But it was exclusive to the GameCube.
Yeah, so we're really limited here. This could be, and it was published by Nintendo, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, we asked that.
Yeah, published by Nintendo, but not developed
by
Nintendo?
So it can't be those, it can't be the Capcom games.
So what, so like Baton Kaitos?
Right.
Were those published by Nintendo? I think they were.
Yeah, I think we're going a little bit too deep here. Is this part of the Metroid series?
No.
Okay, what about Baton Kaitos? There's some other RPGs.
I don't know what else they published in the GameCube era, but didn't develop.
It could be a Pokemon game.
Could be a Pokemon game.
Which is also an active franchise.
Mm-hmm.
That's very true. Can't be a Pokemon game. Is this a role-playing game?
No, that's 15.
It's not Baton Kaitos.
Maybe it's like Donkey Kong Jungle Beat type stuff.
I mean, did they? I would also call that a Mario Universe game, but I know that's controversial.
That's true. That's true.
I'm trying to think if Nintendo published any of like the Sega era, you know, GameCube.
Yeah, games. I don't think they took over publishing for that. Like Billy Hatcher and stuff.
Yeah, like Billy Hatcher, or like Sega Soccer Slam, or like maybe even Monkey Ball. I don't know.
Could it be Monkey Ball? No, because we just got one of those.
Oh, yeah. And we just got one of those. Praise the sun.
um,
and it's not an RPG, so it knocks out all of those GameCube era RPGs, the Tales of Symphonia and stuff like that.
Some crummy sports games for Nintendo from that era, and some good ones like Strikers. Those wouldn't have been developed by Nintendo, but they're part of those universes, though, right? They're all Mario.
Yeah, published by Nintendo.
Does this have characters in Super Smash Brothers?
I mean, probably.
What?
Okay.
Well, we know it's well known enough. If it's a probably. Yeah.
Just remember that. Well, I don't really play Smash Brothers. I just know every conceivable character is in it.
I mean, you know, so there's like, you know, there's like WarioWare, but like all those are Mario Universe games.
Mm-hmm. And that's around still.
Yeah. And okay. That is still around still.
I can confirm this game features characters in Super Smash Brothers.
Hmm. It's Pac-Man. There's Pac-Man versus.
Yeah, and Fire Emblem. Could be Pac-Man Versus.
Fire Emblem's developed by Nintendo.
Yeah.
Could be Pac-Man Versus.
That'd be a mean one.
Did Nintendo didn't publish those Capcom games? Are you sure?
I don't think so. Because they came out on PlayStation 2 eventually.
Oh yeah. Beautiful Joe and Piano 3.
Should we ask if there's like a puzzle element to the game, to the genre?
Hmm.
Sorry, which game are we trying to narrow in on?
I don't know necessarily, but like Pac-Man would be down that path.
Pac-Man,
it's certainly
Pac-Man.
Not like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, does this have multiplayer?
No.
Is it a maze game? I always like.
Mm.
No multiplayer. Like, well,
Battalion Wars or something like that.
Yeah, but that, well, maybe, except that was made by Nintendo.
We just need the franchise if it's in Smash Brothers.
We already listed it's not Final Fantasy. It's not Kirby.
If maybe it's a Metal Gear Twin Snakes. Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes.
Or Eternal Darkness.
I think it might be Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes.
Really?
Snakes and Smash. It's not active over the last 3 years.
He would know that, though. He wouldn't say probably for Snake and Smash.
That's true. That's a good point.
Would he not?
Well, and we've name dropped a bunch of like Sega and Capcom games that we're not sure if Nintendo published them. Have we mentioned this game yet?
No.
It's always a punch to the gut every time.
You have a question and a guess left.
Oh, wow.
I gave you a little hint earlier.
When? Tell us when.
Tina, can you message from someone for our next meeting? Let them know we'll be there momentarily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no problem.
A question and a guess. But Tina and I gotta run.
Okay.
I don't know what hint you gave us.
It's not Zach and Wiki. It's not was this, I don't know. Like, should we ask if it was received well or if it was part of a franchise?
We know it's part of a franchise.
I can't think of what it would be if we haven't even mentioned it yet. We ran through a lot of games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've got the wave race, what type stuff, like racy stuff. Was any of that on GameCube 1080? I don't know.
Orange Smash.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe it's like the Wii Trainer character that's in Smash. That would be hilarious. But that's not a franchise.
Yeah, well, GameCube predates.
Yeah.
It being in Smash, in hindsight, I wish I would have zeroed in on that a little more because I feel like I could have got there, but it's gone now.
Well, what's left? We have one more question, so.
I don't know.
Elements.
I don't know.
I can only remember all the ones that we've already listed and are much more popular than inevitably this one, I suspect. What was the hint? I feel like all you did was say yes or no.
It could be Star Fox Adventures.
That's not a bad guess at all. Oh, well, and it was single player only. That game didn't have multiplayer in it.
It was developed by Rare, so it'd be part of the meta because this is about acquisitions.
That's a pretty good guess.
And there hasn't been a Fox in a while.
Yeah.
That's a very good. I think that's pretty good. I don't know how to zero it in. And is it worth asking if it's a Rare game? Was that the only game they made on the GameCube? Did they do one more?
I mean, he would also know that Star Fox is in Super Smash Brothers.
Or if there's like vehicles or something in the game. Yeah. I don't know if that helps us on other territories.
Does this game have space vehicles in it?
Just vehicles.
Nope.
Always was that.
Shall I reveal it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I actually gave you two hits. The first came when you asked if this developer had been acquired, and I said, let's just skip that one. This game was developed by Skip Limited and Bandai.
That's rude.
Your second hit was when I said I gave you a little hint. Because this game is Chibi Robo.
Yeah.
Chibi Robo. Yeah, and there's an amiibo for this little guy.
Yeah.
Yep, I have it. Chibi Robo's really good. Underrated game.
Did we lose last week too?
I think so.
Yeah.
Damn.
We're on a streak.
Yeah, we're on we're on some kind of streak.
Well, there's always next scoop. And speaking of, that's going to be all of that's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you to Sam. Thank you, Tina. Thank you, Justin. Thank you to Alan working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. Game Scoop will return next week. Until then, my name is Damon. We're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.